This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Four-man rush. Rodgers to the end zone. And Wilson! Can he one-handed and stay in bounds? They say he was out. Out. Lassiter covering on the play. Almost a catch for the ages.
And the only, he's going to go for the pin. The only chance would be the knee if it came down. He has the ball. What a catch. Waiting for that other foot, just doesn't get down. The knee is close. That's what the crowd is reacting to.
What a grab, though. One-handed.
That, oh, my gosh. Ridiculous catch.
The play clock is running.
Okay. That's the catch of the year. It's hard to really take it in from Michaels last night. God, I used to love Al Michaels. Bless his heart. The fastball ain't there anymore, and the changeup's not working either. That was the catch of the year by Garrett Wilson. If you haven't seen it yet, you should check it out. It's a one-handed snag in the back of the end zone on a 3rd-and-19 play. He gets his shin down. It's called out. First, challenged, overturned, gave the Jets a lead that they would not relinquish as they went on to beat the Texans last night on Thursday Night Football, 21-13. There was another memorable play for the opposite reason in that game, which I will get to here momentarily. I'm just happy because I gave the Jets out -2, and they give me a nice 1-0 start to our upcoming football weekend, and we are doing a Friday football show. Good morning, everybody. Denton is here with me. Ben will join us, as in Standig, at 10:35. We'll get updates on some injured players who have been out of practice here leading into this game against the Giants, which is a big one because it's a division game. They're favored, and we're still in nut harvesting time. I mean, I know that come halftime Sunday, half the season is over. But in the NFC this year, if Washington's truly going to be a team that has a chance to contend for something big in January, harvesting as many of these, you know, autumn wins gives you a better chance to play some of those important games in January here at home in Landover. Ben Standig at 10:35. Keys to a win over the Giants Sunday coming up at 11. Smell test next hour as well. We'll have somebody on from New York to talk about the Giants at 12:35. Joe Witt Jr. and Kingsbury spoke yesterday. We'll have some of that sound. But I do want to start with the game last night because, first of all, the first half was terrible. It was the Jets did everything that they could to, you know, basically present themselves as borderline the worst team in the league. And they were down 7-0 at halftime. Houston wasn't much better, but it just was hideous. Halloween night, the stadium, which was lit the last few times the Jets had games, was dead, and it looked like the Jets were done and buried. But they scored 3 times on 3 drives, touchdowns on 3 drives in the second half. And it was, you know, Rodgers to Wilson twice. It was Rodgers to Devontae Adams to ice the game. And they look good. And they're a banged-up team, as is Houston. Houston's missing Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins. But I got to start with, I just don't know why this keeps happening. Malachi Corley, a rookie for the Jets, took a reverse handoff or pitch and was on his way into the end zone for a first half touchdown and a 7-0 Jets lead without being touched, but he dropped the football before crossing the goal line. You know, the DeSean Jackson play. The play that we've now seen at least a dozen to maybe 2 dozen times since DeSean Jackson did it for the first time, I think in 2008 or 2009, whenever that was. He did it in Dallas. Are you kidding me? How does this keep happening? Now, I was really upset because I had the Jets minus two. If you had the under or you had Houston, you were thrilled. I don't know how this keeps happening. Denton, do they not watch football? It's the only explanation to this. And look, I know a lot of players don't watch football. They may play Madden, but you can't do that in Madden, I don't think. You can't drop it before crossing the goal line. I think so many players don't watch football, but then it's incumbent upon the coaches to say in front of the entire team, as you put 10 of them up on a screen in an auditorium, and you get in front of them and you say, don't ever do this. This is stupid. You're going to be called stupid. And by the way, you're also going to be called selfish because you're trying to do something that looks kind of cool and you're hurting the team. And by the way, you're hurting yourself. This does not help you. Looking stupid doesn't help you. Stop doing that. Keep the ball in your tucked under your arm until you reach the end of the end zone and then drop it. It was called a touchdown on the field. The ball was dropped clearly before the goal line, and then it rolled out of the end zone, so it was a touchback. It was Houston's ball at the 20-yard line. It is, I know everybody feels the same way. I just don't know why it keeps happening. Last week, Kyle Pitts in the Atlanta-Tampa Bay game, he basically did the same thing on a touchdown pass, and the only issue was it was inconclusive via replay. They didn't have a down-the-goal-line replay look at it, which is crazy for any NFL game. So it was inconclusive. They called it a touchdown on the field, and the call on the field stood. But he actually also had a defender bearing down on him, and he slowed down and he dropped it just as he was crossing the goal line. Why, Denton, does this keep happening?
I mean, guys are dumb. Guys are silly. Like, I mean, the play yesterday, Kevin, that you just talked about was so bad and so egregious that nobody argued that the ball rolling out of the end zone rule, which is like one of the most polarizing topics in NFL football. The ball rolls out of the end zone, touchback, not touchback. Everybody argues about it. The play was so bad, nobody argued about it. They're like, yeah, this is the way that...
You're not going to argue about when the offensive player does something stupid.
If they fumble,
and they're hit hard and the ball comes out and rolls just inside the pylon through the end zone and it's a touchback, everybody hates that. But of course, you're not going to get that with that play last night.
I mean, guys are just silly. It's literally, there's no other explanation other than guys are silly. You can't do that.
It's beyond, they're not... Like it's clearly there's not a recognition for a lot of these players that this has become a thing over the years. Because if you believe that the players do know it's a thing and has been a thing, then you can only deduce that they're just legitimately stupid. Like they're really dumb or they're really selfish. I honestly believe a part of this is that a lot of players in the league don't watch a lot of football. And you shouldn't have to watch a lot of football to know that this play has been a thing over the years. Like, it's clearly a big part of social media over the last 15 years, whenever it happens. So, you know, these players are on social media. They can't be ignorant to this being a thing. But maybe they're a little bit less aware of it being a big thing. And so they haven't really focused in on, oh my God, if I ever get into that position, I can't do that. Do you think it looks cool to just, as you cross the goal line, just drop the ball immediately?
Not immediately, but there is like an element of if you're just kind of you have your arms lax and relaxed as you run into the end zone that I could see looks cool. It looks, oh, like this was effortless for me. I'd do this in my, like, that makes sense. It's just you got to hold on to the football until you're at least halfway into the end zone. Like, you have to be smart about that. You can't just let it go.
You know, there's only so much coaches can do because of the collective bargaining agreement in terms of, you know, fines or suspensions, because that is an act that is almost, you know, something that hurts the overall product. I don't know. Maybe that's an exaggeration. Actually, it brings a lot more attention to the product when people do stupid things. But there's only so much, you know, you can do. I don't think a coach is going to cut a rookie player with that kind of talent on his second touch of the year. But it has to be for every single team. I heard Dan Quinn say this a few weeks ago, and I forget what the play was that he talked about this. But he said that they, you know, this guy Dave Gardy in particular, but they watch a lot of the rest of the league. And there are a lot of lessons that they take from other games. That's smart. To just watch film of your upcoming opponent and of your team and not consume the rest of the league to find out what's going on in the rest of the league in certain plays, in certain calls, that's just, to me, that doesn't make any sense to me. The more information, the better. And Quinn admitted that they look at a lot of those things and they bring it to like a Friday meeting. They have a Friday meeting of situational football stuff. And a lot of times they'll use, like, I would assume today, they will probably use the play last night to say, hey, guys, stop. This can't happen. This is going to cost you dearly and cost us. I don't get it. I just don't understand why it keeps happening. The other thing I can't stand, and we've seen far fewer occurrences of this being called, but you see sometimes a catch made in the end zone and the player catches it and then immediately drops it. Like, I'm already here. It's already a touchdown. Let me drop it real quickly because that looks real cool. There was a game last year, I think in college, where they actually overturned the touchdown call and called it incomplete because the player just dropped it too quickly. He didn't drop the ball as in dropping it because he didn't catch it. He dropped it to look cool, like, look at how cool this looks. I catch it, touchdown, drop it real quickly. Like, that just looks awesome. And they called it incomplete. Like, that's another thing you'll see occasionally. You'll see that also sometimes on a catch in play, not in the end zone. And sometimes they do it when they haven't been touched, and then sometimes that's a fumble. I don't know. There's just situational football, man. It is such a big deal, especially in NFL games that are decided most of the time by just a few plays. It didn't decide last night's game. The Jets won the game. They were actually very good in the second half. Rodgers was as bad as he's been in the first half, and I don't think the problem's been Rodgers, as I've said on this show all season long. The problem's been the kicker that they finally got rid of, the defense that hasn't been able to stop anybody, lots of drops, and an offensive line that hasn't been able to protect. He hasn't been great, but he certainly hasn't been the worst quarterback in the NFL, nowhere near it. Last night, he basically threw for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns in the second half. I think he was 15 of 17 in the second half. And they shortened it up. You know, they started running the football, and they got to some real quick game stuff so that they couldn't pressure him. He was sharp. They've got weapons, Denton. They have weapons. They have talent on that team. You know, the schedule game is a dangerous game. You know, they were saying at the end of last night, you know, they got the Cardinals and the Colts and the Seahawks and the Dolphins and the Jags and the Rams before they play the Bills next to last week of the season. They could go on a run. Yeah, I could see them going on a run. I could also see them losing a lot of those games. You know, at Cardinals is a toss-up game. You know, Seahawks at home, probably a toss-up game. You don't know what the Dolphins are going to look like. But there is no doubt that they were favored last night for a reason. The reason being, they're capable, very capable. And Houston was banged up. You know, no Diggs, no Collins last night. Stroud looked awful at times. And it wasn't just that I mean, there were people open. The Jet defense has not performed well. There were people open, and he missed people all night long. What were his final numbers? 11 of 30. 11 of 30. He was sacked 8 times in the game. You know who's great, though, man? Joe Mixon is so good. He's such a good running back. Such a good runner. What do you think about the Texans moving forward? With they'll get Collins back, right?
At some point. Yeah, we don't know when. Like, I don't know that there's a timetable floating around there on when he's going to come back. You know, those hamstrings are tough. If they don't have him back, though, they're in trouble. Because there was no direction for C.J. Stroud to go on a big play. Like, it's second and eight.
Tank Dell gets separation. He gets legitimate separation.
But he's not like a number one receiver.
No, I hear you.
Like, he at best, like, he excelled when he was the third guy. I mean, he had 6 receptions for 126 yards, which certainly isn't bad. But a lot of that came on one 50-yard reception. It just felt like there was nowhere for him to go on a second and nine if they wanted to throw. Or, you know, there's a couple long third downs, and he just, like, he was looking for Dell. He was looking for Robert Woods, but those just aren't guys. 3 dudes caught passes last night. 3.
Yeah. Well, he only completed 11 balls. I'll tell you, you know who's going to kick themselves, you know, 6-7 weeks from now? The Colts are going to kick themselves for not starting Flacco last weekend against the Texans, because they lost a 3-point game with Anthony Richardson going 10 of 32. And that completed the Houston sweep over Indy. And Indy's good enough to kind of hang in there and be right around 9-8 at the end of the year. But they're going to have to be better than that to eclipse Houston, because they've been swept. That was, look, you either are in the moment, you say we're going to go for it, and so you should have played Flacco last week, or we're in it for the long run, we're playing our young guy. You know, they basically did something this week in choosing the moment, the season, over the future, when they should have done it a week earlier. Good NFL games on Sunday. A couple of really interesting games. I think that, you know, Detroit, Green Bay, I'm really hoping Jordan Love plays. That'll be a fun game to watch. You know, the first of their 2 games. Somebody mentioned to me the weather at Lambeau is not supposed to be good Sunday. I'll check that out. Anyway, I'll take it last night, Denton. I was sitting there at halftime going, are you kidding me? This dude dropped the ball. I mean, the Jets had, you know, sacked Stroud. It looked like they could hang in there. And then I thought at halftime, they're not winning this game. But they came out, and they were great in the second half. I'll take it. All right. We've got some things to get to before we get to Ben, including a really thoughtful, I thought, email that I got that I want to read to everybody. I'll do that when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team 980.com.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Come. Got this from Hank. Hank writes, it's nice to hear the sound of old Kevin back in the building. I've been a longtime listener, and my passion faded away almost in line with yours over the years. But why not give in to the feelings of a good team after going so long without one? It takes so little to give a little. I'm back in, like you are. Go burgundy and gold. I saw what you did there at the end, Hank. You couldn't even say it, man. Couldn't even say it. But I appreciate that. You know, Denton kind of said to me yesterday at some point, and I forget the context in which it came up. He's like, oh, you're back in.
You said the team was going to win 12 games. You're back.
I did. And I said that they're going to finish with either a 1 or a 2 seed. You know, I mean, by the way, we make NFL predictions all the time. We do this all the time, you know, about a lot of teams. So first of all, I want to be clear on this. I'm not spending a lot of time. By the way, I recognize going into this, most of you don't care. However, I'm going to answer Hank's note. I'm not spending a lot of time right now in the moment on, you know, how I feel about all this. You know, I've just kind of been going with it. You get to the point, I think that you get to a certain point in life where, as you get older, where you realize that kind of dwelling on the past or dwelling on what just happened. My father-in-law used to have this expression, my late father-in-law, used to have this expression where he would just say, next, as in, like, that already happened, nothing you can do about it, move on. He actually had that as his personalized license plate because he said it so often. And he was one of those people in all of our lives that was and still is often imitated as certainly the sincerest form of flattery. But you do get to a point in life where, you know, you realize, okay, first of all, what just happened isn't the worst thing in the history of the world. And two, you just keep moving on. You know, and all of a sudden you'll feel differently and you'll feel better if it was a bad thing or, you know, you'll even out if it was a really great thing, etc. This is different, though, to a certain degree, because it's a very, very emotional issue that is hard to just say next to. And I get that for a lot of you. And oh, by the way, you know, unlike a lot of situations, there may be something that can be done about this, you know, something that still may be done about this in the future. But I don't know that I'm all the way back. I don't like the name. That has not changed. The team still feels to me, I can only speak for myself, like something completely different than what I became attached to over many, many years and many decades. Like I've said many times in the last, you know, 2 years or so, coming up on 3 years, believe it or not, February 2020. Five will be the 3-year anniversary of that disastrous debut of what we see now. But I said that day, and I've said many times, it has felt very much like something completely new, almost like an expansion team. But right now, my emotions aren't like attached to that. They just aren't. I'm just telling, I know a lot of you are like, why are you, you know, a lot of you are not where Hank is. I read a lot of tweets typically before the show, not after the show or during the day or at night. Sorry. But right before the show, sometimes I get a lot of good show ideas from reading some of the interactions that I get on Twitter, on social media, and via email. But a lot of you are like, you're, how are you all the way back in? This means that the name isn't going to change if they keep winning. Look, here's where I am right now. I love Jaden Daniels. I loved Jaden Daniels last year. I wanted him to be the quarterback here. I really like Dan Quinn. I was all in on Quinn. I like this team. I like the people for once in the organization. You know, let me just say, I don't know everybody in the organization, but I like the way the organization operates. It's like professional for the first time. I mean, it was amateur hour for 25 years. I mean, it was just a clown show. Now it's legit. You know, I'm not saying that we've got the next Ravens or the next Packers or the next, you know, incredible organization, but it's so much different and it feels so much different. I still feel emotionally detached, Hank, from some of the things associated with this. I do. But I'm not dwelling on it right now in the moment with the games going on and with Jaden Daniels having an all-time season. And I will say this one thing that, and I don't know if this will end up being the difference maker for me, meaning that if they end up keeping this name and keeping these uniforms, et cetera, I still think that they want to do something with it. I think it'll just be harder if they go on and they're a one seed and they win two playoff games. But I will say that there's something about this city, which I am born and raised, you know, I'm one of the, you know, there aren't a lot of us, you know, I don't like the reference to this city being, you know, super, you know, changeable because of the federal government and, you know, no one's from Washington. That's not true. You know, you guys know that. You know, a lot of you that call this show that I interact with, you're the same as me. You grew up here. You understand there is a real Washingtonian. And by the way, a lot of people just consider themselves Washingtonians if they've been here for 10 years. Whatever. I do have an emotional feeling when I'm hearing the rest of the country, football-wise, talk about Washington being a legitimate franchise that is good and has a chance to compete. It used to be part of why you loved the team during the glory years, is that, you know, they represented the city, you know. And look, I've said this a lot of times. A lot of people that don't live here that have moved out of the area, and we've had this conversation a lot. Like Steve Sands and I have had this conversation a lot. A lot of guys, you know, Legler didn't grow up in D.C., but a lot of people that moved away from here a long time ago actually still had the passion. We were living the day-to-day, and they were living in a different market, still trying to represent the city and represent that, hey, I'm a Washingtonian and I'm a Washington fan. And there's more of that when you're away from the area to try to fly your colors, so to speak. But I'm feeling a little of that right now. Like I'd much prefer to be the Redskins in the old uniforms. I'd much prefer to be Washington in the old uniforms. But the fact that this is kind of a good thing for the city, not just for the people living here, but it's a good representation. Look, sports are weird that way, you know? A lot of people get their impression of places based on the sports teams and the fans that root for those sports teams. You know, those are high exposure, high profile, you know, opportunities to, you know, present your, you know, the place you live. I mean, college sports especially. They are massive recruiting tools, football games, basketball games. I mean, when you have a really good football or a really good basketball team in college, I mean, the number of applicants goes up. It goes up exponentially, and you end up ending up with a better, you know, applicant pool, which allows you to pick higher level students, and then all of a sudden, academically, your school gets better. Anyway, I appreciate Hank, and I'm glad that you're back in, even though you couldn't say Commanders. Go Burgundy and Gold. Go Burgundy and Gold. By the way, we got a division game this weekend, a chance to sweep the Giants. It feels like they've had our number a lot over the years. Be nice to get a second one and get to 7-2. 7-2. By the way, the other thing is them doing well is good for me. It's good for all of us in this business. Trust me. We've had this argument over the years. Oh, you guys, you know, love the negativity. You love that they suck. No, 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 no. There is an argument to be made that it was, you know, that all the drama was better than 8-8, but all the drama was never going to be better than the football team being really good. How good are they? I don't know. We'll find out Sunday. You know, this is another one of those mini trap games. It is. Trust me. And if they overcome it and they look as good as they've been looking recently and they win that game to get to 7-2, we will have big trade deadline discussions on Monday, I think. All right, Ben Standig next. Ben Standig is with us. He joins us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. I was just telling Denton, we got no trick-or-treaters last night. None. I don't know why, but I was a little bit disappointed with that. But the good news is lots of candy for me over the weekend. Plenty of leftover candy for me. How did you do on Halloween?
Well, I wasn't really home. I was burning the midnight oil, working. I was working a little bit. I just wasn't home, but I was on a text. I'm on a text thread with a bunch of friends, and they were all home, and they all have, you know, kids, and they were all saying the exact same thing you just did. And they don't live like exactly where you are. Some live around here, some live elsewhere, and they were all saying that the trick or treaters were way down,
really,
compared to normal. Yeah.
Hmm. I wonder why. It was a beautiful night. It was warm. I think it was the warmest Halloween since 1950, Topper Shutt told me last night on Channel 9. I never watch local news anymore except for the weather. And I wanted to see if it was a record day, and he told me it was the hottest Halloween in 74 years. Ben Standing is with us. We'll talk some football now. That's better for all of you. So how healthy are they? There's definitely some injuries and some players being held out of practice this week, and I'm just wondering, what should we be concerned with? What shouldn't we be concerned with?
Yeah, I mean, the Cornelius Lucas injury after the ankle, after hurting his ankle last game, I think that's something to note. He's not practiced yet. He was in the locker room yesterday. I didn't see him wearing any, like, boot or anything, so hopefully that's a positive sign. But yeah, if he doesn't go today, then yeah, you'd have to, you know, seriously wonder if he's going to be available, even though you granted offensive linemen typically play through a lot. Frankie Louvu hasn't practiced so far this week. Now, that's sort of the way the timing of the week goes in terms of when we get updates and Dan Quinn and things like that. It's not that it slipped under the radar, but we really haven't had a chance to ask since he first got on there the first day. So I don't have any sense that there's a real issue, and sometimes they just give guys a break. So perhaps it's that, and obviously over the course of the year you're going to get banged up. So at the moment I'm not pressed or concerned, but we'll find out more today when Dan Quinn talks to us in a couple of hours or 90 minutes or so. And then there's Brandon Coleman with the he missed last week with the concussion. He was made available to the media this week, so typically that's going to suggest he should be okay. And he's been out there and all that. So you know, I think those are the ones to keep an eye on. But, yeah, you know, by and large, they've been, you know, pretty good health, knock on wood for them. So, yeah, that's a couple things we need to look at today.
So if Lucas doesn't go, Coleman can. Hopefully he starts, and Trent Scott is your backup there.
That would be the question. The okay. point. And I think the Trent Scott, you know, I'm a nervous Nelly with these kinds of things, and I'm always like looking, how do you pinch up wherever you can? I do think that Trent Scott spot, you know, if he's got a play, that's not ideal. So, you know, I do wonder, you know, they added a Bobby Hart to the practice squad this week. He's been a starter in this league. You know, I do sort of wonder to look to pinch up there at some point, but yeah, for now, that's the story.
How much better is the defense right now than it was a few weeks ago?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at it. I think clearly they are playing with a lot of energy and a lot of effort. I'm not saying that they weren't in the beginning of the year, but they're doing that now, and it's all coming together a bit more. You know, early in the year there was talk of this lack of communication in the back seven or so. You know, we're not hearing about that anymore. The pass rush was quieter earlier in the year. They've been fairly consistent getting to the quarterback these days. I think the question is still for me, when they're going up against the better quarterbacks, which you're going to find in the playoffs, right? What that? Because those are the games where they've had the most struggles this year. It's just that they haven't had too many of those games for the most part. You know, last week, Caleb Williams looked pretty befuddled for three quarters. And in the end, he started making some interesting type throws that were working. And obviously, I think at a baseline level, they're pretty good. If the other team doesn't show up, they clearly, I think, now have enough to get it done. But I just still wonder a little bit when, if the other team is, you know, firing on all cylinders, as they say, then what? I think that to me is the question. But again, how, you know, what do we look at here? You know, Jalen Hurts has left on the schedule a couple times. Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins. It's not, you know, they don't have a murderer's row of quarterbacks coming up either. But it'll be a little bit better, a little bit tougher competition, you would think, than it was the first eight games.
I forget exactly what your preseason prediction was on the show for the record, but now that we're at the midseason, I want to hear your revised record prediction.
I mean, I think I was pretty much at the over-under for the Vegas set, so what, like 6.5, 7, somewhere around there?
All right.
You know, I mean, at this point, how do you, you know, it's hard to argue others. And like, you know, just since you brought it up, like for a successful season, my baseline was Jaden Daniels looks the part, and they proved to be competitive game in and game out and not just get run over like they were last year. Well, clearly both of those things have happened. It's just that all, you know, all the extra stuff has worked out better than expected, even deal with the offensive line, the other playmakers on offense, and so on. Not to mention the chemistry. That's a huge deal. This I haven't done the game to game check, but you know they're 6-2 right now. All they have to do to get to 10 is go 4-5. So yeah. It's kind of
yeah. They can lose 5 games and be 10-7. It's hard to see them losing 5 of 9, to be honest with you. But if you want to go there, that's fine.
No. I'm saying I kind of almost want to say 11, but they haven't had an 11 win season since the Super Bowl year in 91. And I think what's the stat? Every other team in the league has gotten to 11 at least twice in that span. So it's saying a lot to even consider that kind of a conversation. Not to mention the recent history, you know, with the Zorn year and the Alex Smith first year, 6-2, 6-3, and then things fell apart. But now I know it's all different. I'm just saying. This is part of the struggle with this. Part of the process this year is, you know, eradicating ourselves from all those types of negative thoughts. But, I don't know how I'm not going 11 at this point, though. All right? I mean, you figure they win at least one of the Giants games, if not both. What else will have? They got Tennessee, you know, Philly and Dallas both come here. They probably at a minimum split those. And then they just got to pick off, one more. So, yeah, I mean, I guess 11 wins, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, 11 maybe. Who knows?
Oh, I
told Denton during one of the breaks, either yesterday or today, I said, are we getting carried away here? Because on one level, there's one thing that's actually now you can pretty much be confident about, I think, 8 weeks into the season, and that is that they're really good on offense. I don't see that changing unless you have injuries, of course. They're really good on offense, and their offense is going to give them a chance in every single game they play. It gave them a chance in the game against the best opponent on their schedule. They lost by 7 in Baltimore on a day where their defense could not get a stop, you know, basically. They still had a chance. You know, they played a really good offensive team in Cincinnati, and they won with great offense. That's a given, but nothing else has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. I think offensively, it's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're very good on offense, you know, right now.
I think the other, you know, again, because so much of this is new, including the people involved, we have to remember that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury history with the Cardinals was they would start off hot almost every year with one of the better offenses, and over the second half of the year, everything sort of went downhill to some degree. That the opponent, you know, whatever it was, they figured something out about what he was doing. The offense just simply wasn't running as efficiently as it was before. Again, it's all different people, all new everything. Kingsbury's already, we've already seen this year, he's made big adjustments to what he's done in the past. But I can't ignore that aspect of this either. So I think that is it's sort of a weird concern to an extent, but it is probably the one thing to note about the offense. But yeah, I mean, but the rest of it, you know, like I said, the times they've gone up against good quarterbacks this year, they've given up a lot of yards and points. And, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. And they've had adversity in terms of specific games, like, I mean, putting aside the Hail Mary part of it, right? You know, I mean, they had to come back and back in week 2 against the Giants.
Right.
You know, when the other teams are scoring a lot of points, you know, that they still have to keep going on offense, et cetera. So but what happens when there's, like, actual adversity? They kind of haven't had any yet because, there's, you know, it started with low expectations, and then they just keep winning for the most part. So does adversity happen? And if so, how do they respond? Again, I'm not too worried about that, especially with the way this quarterback is, he handles himself and the way Dan Quinn also handles himself, and therefore the team takes sort of cues from both of those guys. But, you know, that's the part, because this is all different. We don't have a roadmap to definitively say we've seen this happen before, but yeah, there are obviously positive signs of that question.
Yeah, I mean, the Kingsbury thing is an interesting thing. I think, you know, something that we don't know as it relates to something that we've got, you know, confidence in offensively is what will this California, Arizona, you know, Baton Rouge quarterback look like in cold weather? You know, there are quarterbacks that are, you know, indoor quarterbacks, warm weather quarterbacks. We've never seen, I don't think he's ever played in a cold weather game. I don't think he played in any in his college career. And so, you know, it's also possible you don't have any cold weather games, you know, even at home in January. I mean, it's not going to be warm, but, you know, you could end up playing the NFC title game in Detroit, indoors, or in Minnesota, indoors, or in San Francisco. Who knows? But, yeah. All right. Let's talk about the game on Sunday. Tyrone Tracy, you know, he was concussed in the Monday night game after he had rushed, by the way, for 145 yards against that Pittsburgh defense. But he was back at practice yesterday and limited. They actually can run the football, the Giants can. And so if he were out, that would be a big deal. But how do you see this game? What are your, you know, two or three important keys to beating the Giants on the road Sunday?
Well, one thing I wanted to sort of say about this, I remember earlier in the year, like when I would have some discussions with fans or others, and they would talk about, you know, well, you know, if they can execute in this specific way, they have a chance against this team, or if they can slow the other team down this way. And I was like, you know what, none of that really matters at all. We're still at the moment until proven otherwise, looking at just a team that's trying to find itself, right? None of that matters. Just go out there and play, and whatever happens, happens. Now, because of where they are, and because of where we are in the season, I do think it is now we can start saying, okay, if they can handle this, then they can win the game because we've already seen that they're succeeding in so many areas. So I think in this case, you know, the Giants have a pretty good front seven still, right? I mean, Dexter Lawrence might be playing as well as any defensive lineman in the league. He leads everybody in sacks, and he's a defensive tackle. I mean, that's just a crazy scenario. So he's excellent. Brian Burns is very good. Yeah, they're missing Kayvon Thibodeau, but Ojulari has come in and replaced him and picked up the slack, et cetera. So their front seven defensively is good, so that'll be a good challenge for Washington's offensive line. Of course, they also pretty much nullified Lawrence in that first game. So, you know, they already know each other. You know, by the way, this is also the first game they will be playing a team for the second time with everything with Kingsbury's offense, with Jaden Daniels, et cetera. So I think that's going to be key. You know, in terms of on offense, what they need to do. And then on the other side of the ball, look, I mean, Malik Nabers absolutely torched them in the opener. That was the last we kind of saw of Michael Davis in the cornerback rotation because of that game.
That was the last time we saw Michael Davis. That's funny because we certainly haven't seen him. He's been active, though, right?
He's been playing special teams, but in right. terms of the corners, like even Forbes has been ahead of him when they've, you know, gone to another right. guy.
Yep.
So, I still you look at those corners and you still are like, you know, we'll see. But, you know, obviously Daniel Jones is while he has torched Washington historically, he's also struggled against Dan Quinn. He did look okay in that first game, though. But, yeah, I mean, finding a better solution for Nabers, again, to the point of they have struggled against some of the better cornerbacks in this league. Well, they've also had issues, or best quarterback, sorry, they've also struggled against top wide receivers. That was more earlier in the year, I grant you that, but again, this is the second time they'll see Nabers. So, you know, you slow him down, and you mentioned that their running back issue. You know, they don't have much else to work with. So, I mean, I think those are, you know, just to keep it simple, I think those are probably the two areas that I would look at. I'm assuming also the Giants will have a kicker this week. So you know, they'll have to overcome their opponent having an actual guy that can make field goals. Unlike last time.
I'll get your prediction in a moment. What are you hearing from the coaches? I mean, I've watched the press conferences, but I sense that there's a real belief that Johnny Newton's developing into a major impact defensive player. Do you think that's what they believe, and what do you think?
I believe that's what they think. And, you know, obviously his college career – you know, speaks for itself. You know, he was always sort of on that late first, early second border. And, you know, it's hard to say for sure there's other talented players that teams picked, but probably that foot injury that he was dealing with at that time probably dropped him down some people's boards. But, boy, I mean, he is just such an impressive player. I spoke to his college coach, Brett Bielema, way back around the time of the draft and had been intending to write a story on Newton, but because of the injury and then he was out for a long time, but I didn't get to it until this week and I wrote about it yesterday. And, you know, obviously the coach is going to say nice things about his former player, but what he has said looks accurate that, you know, he's obviously a very, you know, powerful player, but he's got like crazy speed. Like for a guy that size, Bielema said he probably would have run under a 4.8 40 if he had at the combine if he hadn't gotten hurt. He talked about that, you know, this is a guy who is as probably as intellectual on the field as a lineman as anybody he's ever coached, the way he's able to, like, study the opponent even in game and find ways to take advantage of whatever weaknesses are out there. And, you know, I think we're seeing some of that. His game this week, you know, take PFF for what it's worth, but he was one of the highest-ranked defensive linemen in the league, period. And, you know, it's, he's just getting going. So, I think there's a lot to like. And, look, I believe that the pick itself was a best player available type pick, but it may turn out to be ultimately also the, you know, a need pick because John Allen may have played his last game here, you know, for a variety of reasons. And, you know, Newton, it looks like a guy who could be next to Daron Payne, you know, for the foreseeable future. And I do think there's a lot of hope with him.
Trade deadline is Tuesday. What are you expecting? I mean, for a while you've thought that this wasn't going to be super active. What are you thinking now?
Yeah. So I did a deep dive, but I wrote a story about this earlier in the week. I still, you know, there's been no signs as far as I can tell in talking to people around the league, and obviously they haven't done anything, that these guys are going to do anything of note. Sure, there's always the possibility of, trading a late day three pick to pick up some veteran or whatever. But in terms of like some splashy move, I still don't see it. And part of what I was laying out in the story I wrote this week was, you know, you can't look at these things independently. You can't just say they're 6-2, they got to make a move. Well, what about, did you look the next year? What's the next year's team look like? And I laid out, you know, just kind of what this team has on the books right now in terms of starters and players. And, you know, the reality is we signed a lot of guys to one-year contracts. You don't have a lot of guys left. So for next year. So that's something that's got to be considered. And I kind of laid that out a little bit. But, yeah, I still don't see that much. Cornerback would certainly be the position for me that I would go for it. And, you know, defensive line, they've been beat up a little bit. And obviously they lost Allen. And, you know, I guess, look, if there's a receiver out there that makes sense, sure. But clearly the group that they've had, you know, even beyond McLaurin, they found ways to make them successful every week. So it's not nearly the screaming need that I think we all thought it would be a couple months ago.
All right, prediction for Sunday.
Boy, I mean, you know, the Giants, it always seems like they get them at least once, but the way both these teams are going right now, you know, give me Washington 27-17.
All right. 27-17, 7-2 on Sunday afternoon as we go past the halfway mark of the season. That'd be pretty incredible. Thanks. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Always, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody, at Ben Standing on X on Twitter. Last Man Standing is his podcast, and he is totally worth the subscription to The Athletic. I'm a subscriber, and I would urge any Skins fan to be a subscriber as well. He does a great job. David Aldridge does a great job. All of them do. All right, up next, we'll do some Denton news. We will get keys to a win over the Giants this coming hour. Smell test, college football preview coming up, NFL weekend preview. We'll go up to New York, get a guest on to talk about the Giants, the state of the Giants as well. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.